This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I believe the biggest issue facing America today is the easiest one, and that is stand up for children, stand up for life. You know, we can argue about first-term abortion, whether there's exceptions for rape or incest, and that's really where I think people are moving. But our government and the extreme left is moving now into a position of we can kill babies after they're born. It sounds crazy, but it's true. And if we can't get this one right, we don't deserve to be a nation under God anymore. And today there's a big vote. But there are individuals that are picking up their own water. They're carrying water for so many people right now, trying to wake people up. I'm going to share an amazing story you have never heard about a hero of a man who's standing up for life. And we do that in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Danny Woods is an Emmy Award-winning director of photography. He's based out of Columbus, Ohio. He's made several films all over, and you've seen them everywhere. And he has traveled to more than 17 different countries shooting documentary films. But he has met somebody, and he made a film about a guy that... the film is called Grave Hands, and I don't want to explain any more than just that. I want Daniel to talk about how he came across this guy and how game-changing this man is. Welcome to the program, Daniel Woods.
Hi, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
You bet. You bet. So tell me how you found please pronounce his name.
Mr. Fook.
Fook. Okay, thank you.
It's a dangerous one to mispronounce.
It is. Yeah. I don't want to mispronounce
it.
Yeah.
I was a little worried when I met him, and he actually said it that way, so we're good.
Right, okay. How'd you come across him?
Facebook. I saw a Facebook story about him about 2 years ago. Actually, it was mid-2016, and I think it was Hefty.com or something like that, some news organization, and I read it, and... It hit me pretty hard, you know, obviously the subject matter. And I wasn't sure if it was legit. I checked out some more other sources, and it seemed to be real. And so I waited about a month or so, just kind of whether or not I should do something about it, make a film about it, and ask some people around. And turned out we, you know, 2 years later, almost two and a half, we made the film.
Now, he is a guy who he runs an orphanage that cares for little kids, and he also cares for at-risk pregnant women. But that's not why you in Vietnam. That's a very different pursuit to take. I mean, in Asia, generally speaking, the children are not as valued as they are here, especially the unborn. They're just not valued.
Yeah. And it's, even harder for over there is because there's nothing, you know, a girl is pregnant and maybe she's disowned from the family or whatever. There's no safety nets at all. And, a lot of times she doesn't even want to have an abortion, but she's kind of forced into it.
Right.
Which is even worse, you know?
Right. It's kind of our culture maybe 70 years ago where if you had a baby and you were a girl, you were done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. So he has the orphanage, but then he does something else.
Yeah. So he goes to local hospitals and he collects the bodies of aborted babies and puts them in little jars. He prays over them. He gives them a proper name. This is every day. And then he gives them a proper burial and a grave.
First of all, I mean, this couldn't happen in the United States. He would not be given permission to do that. How do the hospitals react to this guy?
At first they were kind of hush hush. They didn't really know what he was doing. Honestly, he didn't really go into details about that, so I honestly don't know. We didn't want to get him in trouble and mm-hmm. Push it. We just cared mm-hmm. about what he does. Mm-hmm. So that's what we focused on.
How long has he been doing it?
Since 2004.
So how many children has he buried?
We've estimated it's 22,000, and
oh my God,
I think that's a very low number. He averages 3 to 6 a day.
Holy cow. And you funded this yourself, did you not?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a good year, of production, and, I figured it would be a good time to shoot a documentary, and we did make it happen.
I mean, did it cross your mind that a documentary about a guy in Vietnam burying fetuses would not be on anybody's rush out and see it list?
Right. Yeah, I didn't really care.
Right.
I felt like it needed to be made.
Why?
Whether or not somebody sees it or not. It's something that, I don't know. It hit me. Like, I just can't really describe it. It's something that nobody I've seen before done. And it's just a topic that's obviously hot right now. So,
and it's not,
it just
but
happened
it's,
to be.
This yeah. is not, you wouldn't describe, would you describe this as a pro-life film?
I would, but it's not in your face. You know, there's no statistics, there's no voiceovers. We just follow this guy and we just see him serve, you know. The guy's the real deal. Like, he loves these kids, he loves these women, and they love him back. And each child that he buries, you know, he said, I feel like they're my own children. And so you could just see the love and, at the same time, the pain, the experiences every day. I mean, the guy is just amazing.
I'm fascinated, Daniel, on this guy because, you know, we're pro-life here. We come in here, we talk about it every day. But I can tell you that I would estimate I've buried approximately 0 fetuses in my life.
Yeah.
what makes him so special? Why is he so different?
Why is he so different?
Why does he do it?
Yeah. Well, this is such a fascinating, I mean, it's clearly he really believes in it, but I mean, a lot of people really believe in it and they don't go to these lengths.
Right. Right. He just, I just feel like he emulated Christ, you know? And I that's all I could say about that. I just, you know, he feels for even the smallest of people.
What did you feel when you were around him?
I felt eased. I felt he was very, very calming to be around. I wasn't sure how to, what to expect. A lot of times, you know, you go overseas and you meet somebody and they're completely different than what you think. And he turned out to be even better. We had this little room where he did his little ceremonies and stuff. And, you took off your shoes, he didn't ask us to, but you just felt like you needed to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah.
How do people see the movie?
It's going to be released probably. We're trying to hit it this fall. We're going to do the film festival circuits, and then hopefully Netflix and Amazon is where we're going to.
Well, that'd be
release
great.
It to.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything we can do to help you? Besides get the word out.
Share it.
Just share it?
Yeah, just share it, gravehandsfilm.com or gravehands.com. And then our Facebook handle and Twitter is gravehandsfilm. Just read the story. On the website goes a little bit deeper and then what we covered today. But, I think you'll really enjoy it, and it needs to be told.
The name of the movie that he's working on now is Grave Hands. And as he said, you can follow him at gravehandsfilm.com or gravehands.com. And on Twitter, gravehandsfilm.com. Spread the word. Important message. There is something happening right now with life. And I think all of our lives as a nation really kind of hang in the balance on the which way we go with life on this. And I encourage you to spread the word on Daniel Wood's new film, Grave Hands. Thanks, Daniel. Appreciate it. You know, look how screwed up we are We're trying to get rid of children. We're trying to abort children. Think of this. It is the difference between left and right. It really comes down to this. We're aborting children and killing children on the left. And then also, we're not having kids because it's too frightening to have kids. Listen to this from AOC. People don't have kids because of climate change. Listen to this.
Scientific consensus that the lives of children are going to be very difficult. And it does lead, I think, young people to have a legitimate question. You know, is it okay to still have children? And I mean, not just financially, because people are graduating with $20,000, $30,000, $100,000 worth of student loan debt. And so they can't even afford to have kids in a house, but also just this basic moral question, like, what do we do? And even if you don't have kids, there are still children here in the world, and we have a moral obligation to them to leave a better world for them.
Yeah, we do. We do. We also will find that our life is meaningless without children, generally speaking.
Well, yeah. You learn a whole different layer of life when you get to that point.
Yeah.
And the idea that you wouldn't have kids because you believe their life would be difficult because of what has so far been a 0.9 degree temperature rise over a century it's an odd choice, I would say. But I feel like it's more consistent with other values here, right? It's not it's not about the 0.9 degrees Celsius temperature change. It never is.
No.
If it were, you know, things like nuclear power would be embraced by people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Mm-hmm. Everyone can have a vision of doom for the future. That's easy. You know, everybody has something where they're scared of and they think in the future things could get worse. But look at where all of these things have led us so far. You know, the temperature, the sea level has risen about the same over the past couple hundred years as they predict for the next 100 years. Would you look back at the history of the past couple hundred years? At what point, what page do you need to get to in that book to get to sea level rise? You get to 12 inches of sea level rise at what time? You'd be reading for longer than your entire life before anyone mentioned a sea level raise over the past 200 years. We've seen an entire, you know, planet go from zero civilization in some ways to the life that we live today. And all of us would look at our lives and say, well, the advantages that have happened over the past 20 or 30 years, whether you can look at an income stat and say it hasn't gone up as much as you want, there's so much more that we have now. We've been able to purchase more, to enjoy life more. You know, it's not the same for every case, obviously, but when you're talking about over the course of an entire country, we've had amazing improvements. And then, thing's going to happen.
Right.
You know, I mean, there are major issues that we have to get a hold of. You've talked about AI quite a bit, and that's a big one. There's a lot of things to be concerned with in the future. I think one of them is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. That's the problem. Her vision of the world, which is socialism, and remind you that Marx defined socialism as essentially a pit stop on the way to communism. It's not its own thing. It's it's a midpoint from between capitalism and communism.
And by the way, Lenin and Stalin both said, we're not communists. We're democratic socialists.
Right.
And I've got news for you. Democratic socialism, I don't care if the people decide, the majority decides, we're going to enslave each other. That's an unconstitutional vote. You cannot vote to enslave the rest of the population. You just can't do it. It's wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong on natural laws. You cannot enslave people. It amazes me that we are looking now at a group of people that believe they know better, and so they will force people to live the way they want them to live, and they will silence those who disagree with them. And they think all of that is fine here in America. And yet, on the same exact road, just at another end of the spectrum, just a little farther into the violet side of the spectrum, you have ISIS. What do? They believe the world has to be run by people who believe in the Muhammad and the Allah that they believe in and follow their rules. Otherwise, mankind will destroy itself. And so they will force everybody. And if you disagree, they will silence you. Well, they're just down the spectrum. That's all that is down the spectrum. Yesterday, it was released, by the way, that SAS, that Special Forces over in England, they went into the tunnels where they're still fighting ISIS. Whatever anybody says that ISIS is done, they're not done. They're in the communities. So SAS, Special Forces from England, went into the tunnels. They finally killed a lot of them, but not before they killed 50 women, 50 sex slaves. They chopped their heads off, left the bodies in the tunnels for SAS to find, and then they put all their heads in a dumpster. I mean, these are animals. These are animals. And animals are created like this and encouraged when you allow anyone, me, them, AOC, anyone, to say it's my way or the highway.
Yeah, and I think you look at Ocasio-Cortez, and we would have, I think, dismissed a figure like her in the past because of, you know, socialism. You know, America's never going to be a socialist country. It's what Trump said in that speech, and I really hope he's right on that. But if you look at Ocasio-Cortez, what you couldn't see, as you're listening on radio, is that whole speech is done with her in her kitchen, seemingly very likable, chopping up, which seems like, I don't know, cheese or fruit or onion or something, and then you know, throwing it out and just having a little moment in the kitchen, a normal normal woman having a normal in the kitchen. This is not a person like Stalin in a military uniform pitching this stuff. It's somebody who, it's a totally different package.
Very relatable.
If you missed hour one, go back and listen to that. Read the New York Times story today about the new millennial socialists and their new plan for fully automated communism. Fully automated luxury communism. It's a new pitch that they're trying to yet another new coat of paint on a good old Karl Marx, and they will continue to do it. And Ocasio-Cortez is part of this. She's just another redesigned Marx. She is pitching the same things just over a slower time stretch than revolution, but that doesn't make it any better. The end point still sucks. And just because she's in a kitchen chopping onions when she's doing it doesn't make it any more attractive.
I urge you to join me Friday morning at CPAC. We'll be carrying my speech from CPAC. It is on this topic.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
Joy Reid apparently is a person that has a TV show on MSNBC, which is apparently a network of some sort. And I just want to play this because I want to show you how far the left has come away from Dr. Martin Luther King. If you listen to what the Right Reverend said about a dream, we have killed it. And listen to the African Americans that are burying that deep. Listen to this.
Black men, blue-collar black men, they're going to have a problem with her record. And you're right, Kareem, she's not the only person.
Kamala Harris.
But I will say, I think the African-American community expects more from people who looks like us, particularly a candidate who wants to represent us. So she needs to find a strong black man advocate who can be in her corner at some point on the campaign, at some point in any space in her campaign. That I would say that was my key advice. Find a prominent blue-collar, self-made black man to be in your corner.
Let's just be candid. When you're saying that she needs to have an advocate out there for her, it's not going to be her husband. She's got to surround herself with African-American women.
Okay, so you know, hang on just a second. So Kamala Harris is married to a white man, which she has had several people on the left say how horrible that is. Should we start with the sexist? Should we start with the classist or the racist language here?
Let's start. Well, the racist is the most obvious. Let's start there.
Yeah. So the racist, from what I get from this, is black people will not understand a woman who is black who looks like them and is trying to represent them without a black man by her side. So I think that covers both racist and sexist, I think. Would you agree, Stu?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think that does, it's because it's interesting. Apparently, not insulting, I guess, to black people, black voters, who apparently can only understand policies from black men. I didn't know that that was a thing.
Strong black men.
Oh, yes.
Strong black men, which I don't understand what a strong black man is, because I thought strong men were bad.
Certainly not physical strength, right? I mean, what
could it possibly be? A strong black blue collar man. So
maybe,
it's also classist.
Maybe they're trying to find the one black man who's clean and articulate.
Joe Biden found him.
It's like a fairy tale, Glenn.
Yeah, maybe Joe Biden was talking about somebody. They said it was a fairy tale. It was, it was Barack Obama.
See, and what a fairy tale is, Glenn, is something that can only happen in a magical land where things don't apply. So it's okay for Joe Biden to say that a clean, articulate black man is a fairy tale. That's okay. And they seem to be applying, I would say, the same logic here. Because imagine if you're, I mean, again, I don't understand. I don't understand every aspect of being an African-American, as I am not one. I believe your son is 0.03%
African-American. So, not necessarily black.
But he's African-American. So maybe you understand this experience a little bit better than I do.
Sure.
But I would be completely insulted if someone said to me, well, we got to get a strong white guy out there to be the advocate so the white people understand it.
Can't
understand tax policy without coming from a white guy.
Imagine Carly Fiorina when she was out there.
Yep.
Imagine if I got on the air and said, she's got to have a strong white male standing next to her.
Yeah.
Because white males are just not going to, they're just not going to understand her. Are you kidding me?
It's so insulting to black voters.
And so insulting. And if I said it had to be a strong white man, well, then you would be in the category of white supremacy. You know, if I said it had to be a strong white man, I would be a sexist and a white supremacist. That is crazy talk. And where are we getting it?
Yeah, I know. And the nicest term you can call it is identity politics. But you're right. Racism and sexism is worse. I mean,
it is rampant
in this statement.
I would also say it's elitist because those people all believe that they know better. And so they have to trick the voter.
Right.
We have to talk down to them. We have to have a strong black man, blue collar worker standing next to her because they're just not smart enough.
You know, it sounds exactly like is Margaret Sanger
it
from back in the
does.
Day. Because that's exactly what
it
she said.
Does.
She had to find black preachers to go into the black communities to convince them all that abortion was a wonderful idea.
Yep.
So she could get her little movement off the ground.
It is becoming more and more like the early American progressive movement. When we first started looking at this, we found that those early American progressives, generally speaking, the ones who were running it were just black evil. I mean, the Margaret Sangers of the world, they were just evil. And they knew what they were doing. Now, you can excuse them and living at a different time, whatever. You don't do that for the founders, so whatever. But they were really bad. And then the progressives, you know, the average person was like, I'm progressive. And they didn't really know what it meant. Kind of like socialist. Yeah, I'm socialist. What is socialism? I don't know. We all live together and we communicate on social media. But the leadership, they know. And the leadership is saying and doing and acting exactly the same way as they did in the early 20th century. And that you will end up on the wrong side of history. And I mean the very wrong side of history if you go there. And that's what they're doing. They're just dragging. Think of Martin Luther King's dream that you would judge people by the content of the character. He's saying, these people are saying that black people will not look at her character.
They're incapable.
They're incapable of her character, listening to what she has to say. They need a strong black man to stand up next to her. And she shouldn't really have married
that's the undertone of all of this stuff.
All of it.
Yep.
All of it.
Why did she marry a white dude?
She's sold out her race.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me?
Fascinating.
I mean, I remember the racist debates at the time that I don't think at the time were all racist. But I remember the debates of, you can't marry a black person. What would you do if your son or daughter came home with a black person?
That was in the context of saying it would be rough on your child,
yeah,
right?
No,
or your grandchildren.
No. I remember my grandfather saying, you know, what will that do for the children? The children will pay the price. They'll go to school and they'll be in neither group, and both groups will reject them, and it'll be horrible for the children. And that, I think, was true back then. You could probably say in some ways it's still true because kids are just cruel.
And it's much less, though. And the only way to make it untrue is to ignore that stuff. You know,
right.
You just go, you know, over time, that does seem to work itself out, though it's nasty at the moment. And you can understand a protective parent thinking that way in that time. But that's a lot different. I mean, there's a book I was reading recently. It's an old book. It had two testaments in it, like one that was super old, and then they had like a newer one. It was
not
like,
familiar.
I guess it was the sequel. I don't know.
Not familiar
but
with it.
They put it in one book, and it talks about how we all come from the same blood. So I don't understand the alt-right people who say they're so Christian-y and need white countries. And I don't understand someone on MSNBC saying, hey, you know what? Maybe we need black men to talk to black men because black men can't understand policies because if they don't see, you know, hear it coming out of the voice of someone that's the same color as them. None of that is, you know, they say Christians are so hateful. I don't know if you know this. This Two Testament book I'm speaking of has a little bit of influence over Christianity. And it's pretty clear that race is not an issue. God kind of likes all the races. He's kind of a fan.
I have to tell you something. I found two things. I was reading that old dusty book. I don't know. But there's a writer, Luke somebody or other.
Oh, yeah.
Might be Luke Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
He said, and now listen to this. Blessed are ye when men shall hate you, and when they shall separate you from their company, and shall reproach you, and cast your name as evil.
Wow, you're going right to heaven. Right. You are really blessed.
I know. Yeah. But no, think of that. Think of that.
Yeah.
Cast you out, and I know it means company, meaning, you know, companionship, but think of it as company. Right now, if you stand up for gender, you have a good chance of being thrown out of your company. And your name is cast as evil, and you're toast. And then there's this. Woe unto you when all men shall speak well of you. Think of the people and how you are forced to speak well of people or things or ideas. And if you don't, your name is cast out. You don't want to be popular in these times. This is the first time it's actually very healthy not to be part of the popular culture, not to be popular, to be despised. Wear that as a badge of honor right now. Because those are the times we're living in. And you have to decide, we all have to decide, are we going to be popular? Do we want to be popular? Is that what this is about? Because woe unto you if everybody's saying good things about you.
And I would say, too, you know, how many religious leaders have we seen over the past, you know, decade that have made decisions based not on what you just described, but on pragmatism?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we need to win. We need to make this decision because we need to, we can't help it with this time. We have to just do this. It's the exact opposite you're supposed to be getting from
just
faith in every way.
Who was it? I was talking to a preacher just recently that was saying we should be the pariahs.
Yeah.
The churches should be the biggest pariahs. Where do you see the churches that are really under attack, that are just in the news all the time because they said something? You're not seeing them because they're all playing it safe. They're all saying, well, we'll just take it a bit at a time. When we are at the point of we're not sure how a vote today will come down in the Senate, whether they will vote to ensure that it is against the law to kill a child after birth, when we're not sure how that vote is going to come down, why are our churches so popular? We had a great discussion with Rabbi Daniel Lappin on Saturday's podcast. If you are not subscribing to our podcast, please do it. Go to, you know, glennbeck.com or Apple or wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe. And please rate and review. The reason why that's important is it helps other people discover it. So please rate and review. Please give us a 5-star rating. It helps other people to find it. Anyway, we had Rabbi Lappin on, and we were talking about this anti-Semitism that is happening all around the world. Here's what he said. Listen to this.
It rises up because the ultimate titanic cultural struggle in the world today is exactly the same as it was in Russia in the beginning of the 20th century, or in France at the end of the 18th century, or all the way back to the 9 verses in chapter 11 of Genesis, the Tower of Babel. It's always a struggle between, and loosely paraphrased, it's a struggle between a divine, godly vision for human society and a human-structured vision for society. And the Jews have always been recognized by great leaders like Winston Churchill and philosophers and scholars. And they've also been recognized by anti-Semitic tyrants as the official architects of that divine order of human social organization.
Is what we're facing right now truly is evil? It's truly evil. We've crossed into bad politics and all of that. We've crossed the Rubicon, and we're now looking at the destruction of people, not stuff, people, and the devaluing of life, and that life is not more important than the planet, that humans are a virus. They're not part of nature. They're out of nature, and they're killing nature.
It seems more and more on the left, too. The human virus is very specific to Jews.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, Ilhan Omar and Tlaib and these new group of congressional Democrats have come in, and they've made their points very clear over their lives that they just do not like or trust Jewish people. And for some reason, the Democrats are not in revolt over this.
I know. I will have much more hope when we start to see from the Democratic Party what we're now seeing in the Labour Party of England, where Labour Party members who have been Labour Party forever said, this is getting spooky. There are too many anti-Semites in this party. I want out.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.